turn this on. Oops. Okay. Today is June 17th, 2023, and we are with Peter Ng, a leader in the Chinese American community. And my name is Susie Ling, and Susan Dixon is also with me. Mm-hmm. So we actually wanted to start out with your own family history, like where were you born, your parents, and your Chinese American heritage.
Sure. Susie, thank you for inviting me. And I'm a regular first generation immigrant, like everyone else in my hometown. Only thing they want to do is to immigrate to the United States, to the Golden Mountain. So it's always in the whole, because I'm from Taishan, right? So one of the five districts in Guangdong Province that folks just wanted to go out to the US, to South America, so they can make a better living. So it's picked in to our mind that your goal is to leave, to go to Gamsan. And so my grandfather and great-grandfather, actually, they were here already. So my grandfather, actually, he lived in New York City, and he would travel back to the homeland and get married and have kids. So my father has an older brother and one older sister and two younger sisters. And my grandfather would take the eldest son with him to the US, to New York City. And my father, being the younger son, was left at home to accompany the mother, my grandmother. So I'm being the one that got left behind, so I was in the country until the government change in China. And back in 1949, I was born in 1953, by the way, so it's after the communist takeover. However, life was getting tough, so my family, my father and my mother, they moved to Hong Kong to get a better life. And then my grandfather still make contact and connection with his family back home, and he would write from time to time, once every 2 years, send a little gift over and things like that. And then finally decided to petition my family, my father, to come to the state. I guess there was after the Exclusion Act has been abolished. So we wanted to come. So my grandfather put the paper in, application. Unfortunately, before the application even complete, mm-hmm. He passed away. So we were kind of stuck. The dream would not come true, right? So kind of disappointing, but life goes on. Until back in 1969, we receive a notice from the immigration, from the US. They say, oh, we were just cleaning up a file and we noticed that you have an application that is still open. We haven't closed it. If you're interested, instead of a family application, we can convert it into a refugee application. So of course, yeah. So of course we say yes. So in 1970, become an immigrant and as a refugee to come to the US. So I, instead of going to New York City, I came to Los Angeles area because we needed a sponsor, and our sponsor lives here in Southern California. So the whole family came here.
A couple of background. What did your grandfather do in New York City?
I really don't know. Mm. Never asked. All I know is he hang around in the association, the Gongshuo, in New York.
In the Ng?
In the Ng Association.
Nice.
Yeah, New York City, just like LA, has many association, and the Inn is among the biggest in terms of population. Yeah, we are really have a lot of Inns there, because I guess the early stage, a lot of Inns go there first, instead of to the other cities.
And I guess you don't know much about your great grandfathers.
I've never met him, although I have pictures of him, because I still kept the pen that he was sent over as a gift to me. So I was very appreciative that he know of a grandson being existed. So yeah, I've never met him. And then my uncle, my father's eldest brother, I never met him either, never received any letter. Maybe my parents did. I did receive a picture of him when he was resting in a park in New York City. And he sent me a painting when I got married as a gift.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So you came here when you were about 16, 17 years old for high school?
Yeah,
That's rough.
Yeah, I attended most of my high school year in Hong Kong. So when I came here, I required some requirement courses. So I went to high school to make up all the courses required, U.S. history, health education. So when I finished, it was August 1970. So they let me graduate when I was 17 years old.
What did your father do as a profession in 1970?
Oh, back home, he was a tailor.
Oh.
Yeah, he has a tailor shop in my hometown in Toisan City. It's considered one of a rarity, because back home in China, how often do you wear a suit, right? So he was an apprentice when he was 11 years old. He went to Hong Kong to learn the craft of tailor. So he gone through many, many years, follow his teacher's teaching, and he became very good professional, the Western tailor. So he went back to China and opened his own store to do tailor. But of course, he does even the Chinese tailor, or the ladies' dress, and so on. So when we immigrate to U.S. because of language barrier, he's not able to open a store. So what he did was he worked in the garment factories over here locally, just to help out.
In Chinatown or downtown?
In Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
But then he even have a dream of opening his own factory, because he was a businessman before, and of course he's got his craft that he's very good at it. Because of language, so he was not able to. So later on, he attended the classes over the workforce for Chinatown Service Center. It was actually not CSC at the time. It was by the church.
So, the Methodist?
Yeah, Methodist Church. And then they got a grant, and so started. He attended the classes, and then he got a job. It's a union job too, as a janitorial job. So he was able to earn a better living condition and better wage.
Were you staying in Chinatown at the time?
Yeah, at first we came here, we stayed at our sponsor's house in Pico Rivera. Then after a few months, my parents find a place right here up the hill on Wayne Hall Drive. So a little bungalow, three units, we're in the middle unit, one bedroom. So my parents stay there, and then once they settle down, I move with them. So I stay over there, and and still go to high school in Pico Rivera. Take the bus every morning for a little while until I graduated. Well, we did get a car pretty quick because we realized how important it is driving. So I begged the counselor in school. I say, "Oh, we just got here. We need to go shopping. It's very heavy to carry it long distance. So we need to drive. So can you allow me to be first in line to go to the driver education?" So the counselor was really nice, and then he signed me up right away. So I still remember I came here in February, right? February 20th, 1970. And I got my driver license on April 15th.
Congratulations. That's 2 months. that's very fast.
It was a quick course.
And very important.
Yeah.
Because now you were kind of the adult for the family, weren't you? In that,
well,
you had to take on a leadership role for the family.
Definitely, having a car makes a whole lot of difference, especially you walk up the hill.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we were living. I mean, can you imagine carrying a sack of rice, 25 pounds or whatever, right? It's hard.
You were the only child?
I'm the only child.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were you in touch with the Ng Family Association at that time?
What?
No.
There wasn't one, that's right.
No.
Not until the 70s, until you...
My sponsor, my uncle, his name is Eddie Poy.
Yes.
I think a lot of people know him because he's a beverage salesman, works for ABC Beverage Company. So he would deliver to markets, restaurants, on beers and Cokes or whatever. So he's a veteran too. So he's very well-versed in Chinatown, knows everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very lucky, our family, that because he's also an Ng, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even though his last name is Poy, but he's actually an Ng. So he lives in Pico Rivera.
Mm-hmm.
So when he sponsored us, so naturally we go to his house
mm-hmm.
when we first arrived.
How did you guys know him?
Oh, we're from the same village.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, because every time, almost everyone that comes to the U.S. is always from the same origin. Yeah, so either a little village or a big village or the next village, they all connected. They all remember, oh, so-and-so from back home. That's how we all connected.
So did your father know him already?
My father know him, and when we were approved, we were trying to find people to sponsor. So my father knows him, so he wrote him, and he was gracious enough to say, yeah, of course. He's such a good guy, he personally I know of. You know, if you walk in Chinatown in the old days, you know everybody, especially him, because he drive around in his beverage truck. He knows everybody. If he see a stranger, he know he's a stowaway. He would stop and then they say, "Hey, sai go ya, ni nai ge ya." You understand what I'm saying?
Where are you from?
Yeah. And he would say, "Oh, I've just jumped the boat." I know that he saved at least 3 people the short time that I've been with him.
Mm-hmm.
He would take them in to his house and find him jobs. Because in the old days, a lot of restaurants in the rural area, right, outskirts, we call it Fao Doi, the outside, not the big metro in those days. It's hard to find labor. So they would take in labor and train them and then provide them room and board to live there. So would be perfect for the stowaways. They come in, they find them a job, and he knows everybody, right? My uncle. So he said, "Hey, you need somebody to help? Oh, here's the guy." So he would get him started, and they'll learn the trade, learn how to cook, and then eventually they move up. So that's how he did it.
And why do you think he did this?
Oh, you help your own folks. Yeah, and they know how difficult it is the immigrant to come here. They just wanted to share, to give.
So you had an auspicious start in that Eddie Poy was your mentor
yeah.
and really shared with you the responsibility of being a Chinese American.
That's right. Yes, I learned a lot, and I always admire him for doing that. Mm-hmm. He never asked for anything in return, no need. Mm-hmm. But all those that helped always mention him, and you know, afterward I bump into some of them, and they are always for life. Yeah, and that's priceless.
Is that why you're in the CCBA?
I was think so. I thought that they needed someone to just together. It's kinship, because this is where you're from and you're supposed to be to belong and help each other. So when they asked me, I was working, but they asked my dad, say, hey, how about asking Peter to join the association to help out? And my dad said, yeah, maybe ask him. And then I figured something that I had to do the same to help. So I said yes, and then my dad said, okay.
Is this the ing or the...
The ing. I
start with the ing.
When I first started, it's just the ings. Mm-hmm. Nothing else.
And when was that about?
1976, 6 years afterward, yeah, after I landed, yeah.
You were a young man.
Oh, I was 23 years old. I was young. Young father, too. Yeah, very young.
And so your father put you up for this position?
Yeah, in those days, I mean, it's a thing to do. Even I think it applied to everyone here in Chinatown. Mm-hmm. Everybody belonged to an association and trying to give. I mean, especially for the first generation. Second generation may be already got their foot settled and they have other things that they can do. But for first generation Chinese, I think there's an attachment. And we're trying to find places where we can contribute, or maybe when we need help, we can help each other.
So the Ing Family Association is like a village community for you, like an extended family?
Yes, it is. The uncle, Eddie Poy?
Eddie Poy. Mm-hmm.
He actually was one of the founder. Mm-hmm. He is the first president, mm-hmm, of Ing Association. But before the association was established, we call it a communication hub. So they would gather in his house, along with other, there's other founders too. There was seven of them. So they would take turn and hold meetings just to get everyone together. Then finally, we get enough people and we have association in San Francisco. They were the first to establish. Then there's New York one. And then they approach us, and then so we started the association and have a actual place in Chinatown. Mm-hmm.
So from there you went to CCBA?
From there, yes. I joined other organization before I get into CCBA. Well, I represent the association to be a director to CCBA, so I attended meetings. Never thought of being a leader in CCBA. I'm really not the type, per se. I don't really care about that. But if I think people wanted me, I wouldn't mind to contribute. Yeah, so. It was not really my intention to be in CCBA to be a leader, no.
And when did you start joining the leadership of CCBA? Was that?
I was approached by Gary Lau, who is, at the time, he was one of the four assistant. He was the assistant chair, vice chair of the supervisor. So they move on up, and he's looking for an assistant. So he called me and said, he's from Toisan too. because I also belong to Nanyang. Nanyang is Toisan, right? So Lao is a Longgong. My mother's a Lao, so I'm kind of connected with that too. There's a lot of connection that I'm, because of all these names and affiliation that I belong to. So he called me and said, "Hey Peter, want to be my assistant? Because I'm going to run for the chairman and you can be the vice chair." And I said, "Okay, if I wanted to run, I don't think I have the patience to go all the way up. If I want to do something, I want to really do something." So I said, "No, Gary, I don't want to be the assistant. I want to run for the chair, run for the president, if I really want to work, because I don't have no patience."
Tell us about CCVA. Is this in the 1980s then? Mm-hmm. Who was the leadership? What were their issues? What was the structure?
Oh, well, CCVA has a very, it's a very important role as far as establishing stability, also to be a mediator or even official for the Chinese community. In fact, they are like a quasi-government. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm sure you know that way back where the Ganya building was. At the time, whenever there's dispute, they would always be the one that's come out and say, "Oh, look, this is, I think this is the way it's supposed to be." So they always play a very important role, and it's well respected. So because of that, we should always honor them, and whoever the leader of CCPA has a duty, a pretty heavy obligation to continue that. Although nowadays, because of maybe language or knowledge, that every president's different. They may be focused on one thing and not the other, and they are more Chinese now and more diversity. So things could be a little bit tough now. Yeah, it's a lot more complicated than in the past.
Could you give some examples of mediation and leadership in the past?
Well, there's so many prior incidents in the Chinatown area, right? Community. There's always, depending on what it is, it could be dispute. It could be maybe economical reasons. So there might be fights and it could get violence. And CCBA would step in and try to resolve it. It is something that carry on for many years. LA have one thing that is lack of the other ones. For example, Seattle and San Francisco and New York. Because in the past, when you leave the country, when you come back, you need a certification, and CCVA provides that, and LA don't have that privilege, because no one leave LA, everyone leaves from San Francisco or Seattle.
Yeah.
They get to collect what, $3 is a head tax or something, so that you can get a certification and you can return without questions. It was that powerful, the CCVA at the time.
And you mentioned today things have gotten more complicated. Can you give some examples of that complexity?
Yeah, because first of all, you have the two government, mm-hmm. in mainland and in Taiwan, mm-hmm. the two government, they don't really see eye to eye. Although they're trying to maintain peace as much as possible. And over here, the Chinese community also separated into two groups. So, but they also respect each other, and they don't really argue or anything like that, as long as they don't cross to other one, which is good. I've seen that is doing great on that. And but still, I think deep in the mind of everyone, they would like to see a unification of some sort. In the past, there's only one government, right? The Qin Dynasty, or Dr. Sun Yat-sen, at the uprising, and all because he went all over the world to advocate that and also to raise fund. And part of the funding is from the U.S. So he always say, hey, the Chinese overseas is really the one that helped me to build up this this new China. And we are very proud of that, being a part of it. So that is the reason why there's many of the older generation Chinese is still for the Republic of China, the government in Taiwan. They feel that they have something to do with it, to help us to build it, to create it. So they always are very proud of that.
Wow.
Although the new generation, if you're from mainland China, they also see that China is getting stronger. And now it's not the old China anymore. It's very modernized, and so they would be proud of that too as well. And they finally, they feel that the Chinese are equal to the other ethnic groups of the world. So it's very, very, I would say, not complex, I would say it's good, but also you gotta be careful of who you talk to. But I think everyone means well. I think CCBA is doing a pretty good job to make sure to stand as a mutual ground.
In Los Angeles and the United States has changed tremendously also in the 50 years you've been in the U.S.
Yes.
And so do you feel, what are the roles of CCBA as we move forward?
Because there's a lot more organization started, and CCBA need to have more new blood to come in, new generation, so that it can be adaptive to the system, to know the law and the rules and know how to maneuver, so they can have more influence. In a way, you have more influence, you can benefit your community. So CCBA should open up more to the new generation.
And how do we do that?
Well, they are gradually doing it. They have no choice. Just like our Ing Association, we get Wing Ing. They are new generation. The old ones are hard to come in, and they just cannot, they don't know they don't speak the English, the language. So with the new generation, it'll be much easier to adapt, and also to get your association to the current condition.
When you have meetings, are they still in what language do you use?
Our association?
Yes.
It's bilingual now.
Bilingual?
Both Chinese and
Cantonese?
Cantonese, yeah. Cantonese.
Hong Kong Cantonese?
Uh-huh. Hong Kong Cantonese.
And English.
And English, yeah. It's bilingual.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But CCBA is in what?
CCBA is primarily Cantonese.
That's right.
Yeah. However, I think a lot of them, they know English, so, but only a few that don't. So, because we want to make sure everybody understand what's going on, so we're still making sure. So, Cantonese always, but there will be times that there's some English involved.
Do you feel it's the leader of Chinatown or the Chinese Americans or Asian Americans? We, you know, because there's Mandarin Vietnamese speaking Chinese Americans today, and even Spanish speaking Chinese Americans. You mentioned South American Chinese Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So is the role of CCBA needing to broaden to incorporate these other entities?
I think the leaders most of them speak English. Mm-hmm. Like Ernest Lee, he's an engineer. So of course he knows English, and but because of the traditions, so he have to also know Chinese in order for him to communicate well. And as much as we have a lot of leaders that knows English, but the membership that on the CCB and their members of the members, they don't speak English. So our primary objective, the original objective is to help our folks, right? If they don't speak English, we must be able to speak the language for us to help them. So we cannot leave them behind. So that's why we still maintain the Cantonese as our primary language.
But as with Chinatown Service Center, mm-hmm. more of your clientele speak other languages, not Cantonese.
Yes, we have Qiuzhou, Toisan, Mandarin, mm-hmm. pretty good mix. Mm-hmm. Depending on where, like in Monterey Park, we have a lot more clients and patients speaks Mandarin. Over here is a lot more Cantonese over Mandarin. Mm-hmm. So most of our staff are bilingual or speak
or
multiple dialects.
Trilingual or quadrilingual.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, since we have you here, why don't you just tell about your involvement with the Chinatown Service Center? How did that start? Mm-hmm. Then now all of a sudden you're CEO. So.
Uh-huh.
that's because you were a successful businessman before that, so that's...
I don't know about successful, but I was making...
Can you educate me? What were you kind of business were you involved in?
Maybe it is a business, but different kind of business. I was working as a bank teller. My first job is a busboy over in Golden Palace.
I remember that place.
Golden Palace. At that time, Golden Palace, Grandview Garden, right? Those are the places to go. And I worked at the bank, started as a teller, and then became operation officer. Got some training from Bank of America, was very useful for my career. Then after the bank, I became in real estate sales. Then I formed a real estate company with a couple of partners. And after the real estate, then after a while, I got into auto repair business. So I acquired a few franchise locations. So I was doing car repair. I don't really get my hands on repairing cars. I hire people, I hire mechanics, but I do understand car, how it functions. Huh. Yeah, this from my college days. I took mechanical engineering. So way back. So I helped later on. Then after the car repair, at the same time too.
Currently.
I always have two jobs. always, except now. Then we got into construction. So I'm doing car repair and also have a construction business. So I did that for about 25 years, construction. Car repair also 25 years. And the real estate about 20. So, because never make enough money, right? So I have to get a part-time job. No, just kidding. Just get bored, so I do something else. And then I get involved in Chinatown Service Center because I always remembered how he helped people, including my own father. So when I was in CCBA, Michael Chung was the president at that time. He approached me and said, "Hey, Peter, CCB has a representative to be a board director at CSC. Would you the one already terms up, would you like to be a join the board of CSC to represent CCBA? I said, oh yeah, of course, love to. So I joined the board of director at CSC in 2006.
With Larry Liu?
Yeah, with Larry. Yeah. So I went in there, worked with the fellow board members, and we were going through some tough time at a time. So after a while, we had to reform. So, and then we have change of leadership after Larry, and it was Karen Brickley. And then Karen, they both try real hard, right? But then Karen, after she come on board, one day she called us and said, Peter, my doctor told me I have to retire early. otherwise, it's going to be bad for my health. So she resigned. So we have no ED at the time, executive director. So the board, I was the board president. So we talked to the board, and the board said, well, we need the ED. Why don't you go ahead and take it to do it? So that's why I step in as an ED at the time.
What were you thinking?
I don't know. I thought we really need to have somebody new. I went in pro bono.
Whoa.
Yeah, I went in pro bono. Actually, when Larry left, I did it pro bono a couple of times as an interim. Then when Karen left, I went back in as a pro bono ED again. So after I did it for about 6 months, the board said, Peter, you cannot do that. I said, yeah, it's not healthy. Mm-hmm. It's not that for me, but it's not healthy for CSC.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot sustain. So, okay, pay me. No, just so I didn't get paid about till 10 months after I stepped in. But anyway, now we're okay. Now I can step down and
so when did they move out to be in, out in San Gabriel Valley? When did?
We actually have the social service branch in Monterey Park in 2003,
mm-hmm.
about 20 years now. Then 2011, we opened up the Alhambra Medical Clinic. So it's been
so it's over near True Light Church, right? On Commonwealth? It's over in
there? The clinic across street from the church, yeah.
Okay.
On Garfield, yeah. Correct. So we have our presence in Monterey Park very early, because it's needed. So that was a foresight of our CSC leader that want to establish there to help the immigrants in the San Gabriel Valley.
Why don't you boast about Chinatown Service Center? What are you most proud of?
Oh, the rich history from everyone at all level, from the board of directors volunteering to the leadership and to all the staff in the front line. They all have a passion. That is, I just cannot speak enough about that, because without it, CSC would not be here today. And they help so many people. Right now, we have 7 locations. So annually, we serve about 30,000 people in encounter about 150,000. It has a big change ever since we became FQXC back in 2007. But the free clinic is actually established in the 1990s already. We have clinics. Folks would go in there, and the local doctor over here, they would go there and volunteer or get paid very low just to help out those that that needed, the immigrants that have no insurance, so nowhere to go to get their health checked, right? So from there, and then now, of course, the FQXC is a whole different arena, different level. We also become the certified community behavioral health clinic. That is also a federal designation. So we have grown, and we still maintain the same passion to help folks that comes in. So thanks to our staff, they are really working real hard on every day to everyone that comes along.
But it has to be thanks to you too, because they do major fundraising, and their fundraising is very successful.
Yeah, the fundraising is led by the board,
mm-hmm.
right? So the board has a lot to do with it. They always engage. I mean, we have a wonderful board. They are so engaged, and we do everything together. They actually just join in on any extracurriculum or anything that we need them to do. They always just say, okay, we do this. And it's just amazing. So it just kind of trickled down. And with this, I'm just a bridge, basically, connecting everyone and trying to support everyone. So I think we're doing okay.
Have you gone back to Tucson?
Oh, many times. Many times. One time.
Well, how do you feel?
How do I feel? Every time I go back, there's improvement, changes. People are more advanced, which is good, unlike in the old days. The first year I went back was 1981. Mm-hmm. It's just far, far from whatever it is now, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you go back to 1981, there's no car on the road. The transportation is those
bicycles.
Motor, no, not even that.
Oh.
It's the one that you use to do agriculture for the farmland, and then they hook up a trailer, and that's how you haul things. And you commute by only bus, or train, or bicycle. Not even motor scooter, no. Bicycle. So when I went back in 1981, I would travel around in bicycle. I'm serious.
No, I believe you.
I went back there, you know, 1979, wasn't it? U.S. established relationship, right? Nixon. So since then, 1980 and 1981, I went back in 1980 I went back, yeah.
Very early, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
So you consider yourself an American now?
Me?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I am an American. I really like the way of life in America because of the abundant resources that you can go around and you have freedom. But deep inside, I think there's good things about my heritage of being a Chinese. I would hope that maybe both cultures can be blend together. Chinese are known to be more reserved, not as easily to express. Although you do have seen some that is very expressive, kind of surprise. But the American way is much more more open, other than the violence that we have nowadays. I think that is a little bit off track now.
Anything?
No, don't you want to ask him about how to say, write his name in Chinese.
I will.
Oh.
I just kind of want one more, sorry, if
mm-hmm.
I may.
Sure.
I mean, I work with 18-year-olds a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And what would you like to tell an 18-year-old who's worried about, you know, cell phones and his future and... As a Chinese American, what advice might you give?
Well, I would say to all the Chinese American to be proud to being an Asian, to being a Chinese, and you're very fortunate to be in a great country of America. So you should take the opportunity to express yourself but never forget about the heritage and be respectful to both culture, both heritage.
Well, you're certainly a role model of that, sir.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
You're welcome. So, thank you.
Are we good? Okay.
I'll stop.
All right.
So, I just want to say, I knew CCBA by the time, I don't know if I can stop this. When Michael was president and I went to some of the dinners over there,
uh-huh.
your language skills helped propel you. You didn't need somebody standing there to translate.